Hi, I'm Reverend Carol Saunders, host of the Spiritual Forum. I'm here with a lot of interesting people who are consciously walking the spiritual path, experiencing and expressing the divine in unique ways and through unique lenses. Everyone here has wisdom to share and an interesting story to tell, all to inspire you on your spiritual path. Welcome to the Forum. Welcome, everyone, to the Spiritual Forum. I'm so glad you're here. And I'm really excited about today's guest. I think I'm just going to jump right in rather than have much of a run-up. I want you to meet Alan Heeks. He is a well-being expert, and I just absolutely love that title. Well-being expert and an author who's had a successful business career before following a wild impulse and starting an organic farm from scratch with zero experience. This baptism by mud showed him how organic methods can help us cultivate our human nature too. And I'm going to wait and let Alan explain how we can do that. His new book is called Natural Happiness: Use Organic Gardening Skills to Cultivate Yourself. This book has grown from many workshops that he's led for individuals, community groups, and NHS doctors. Welcome, Alan.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you too. Now, you're in the UK, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm actually in Wales, right on the border between England and Wales.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. We're just going to really enjoy having this conversation from both sides of the pond.
Yeah.
So, Alan, I'm so intrigued by your journey, and I really want to learn all about how to start organic farming with no experience, because that's kind of where I am. But I'd love to hear your story. Like, how did you get into that? And how did you create this book that helps us really with our life and spiritual journeys? So why don't you just spend a few minutes letting us know a little bit more about who you are?
Yeah. I mean, it's still a bit of a surprise to me that I'm, you know, offering teachings around well-being based on organic farming and gardening. You know, if you'd asked me at the age of 30 if this was kind of in my future, I would have really laughed out loud. I mean, basically, in the first 20 years of my adult life, I was very ambitious. I wanted to kind of be successful in business, make things happen. It wasn't so much about money. It was about kind of recognition and doing something with results. But, you know, I had a very good quality training. I trained in marketing with Procter & Gamble. I lived in the States. I did Harvard MBA for 2 years. So, you know, I was a bit like the Marine Corps of the business world. Yeah, I was trained and psyched up to take control and make things happen. And in a way, I feel like my sort of career has been to going from one extreme to the other. Yeah, by the age of 42, I was kind of getting kind of tired of just making things happen. I was feeling like I really wasn't sort of content with the business world. I was seeing the downsides of it, the environmental impact of it. So I was in a kind of one of those dangerous periods where I'm open to a big idea. And so I can remember sort of for a year or two thinking, well, what am I doing next? And nothing happened. Then very slowly, this idea kind of emerged of an organic farm as a place where teenagers could kind of find their own roots and find their sense of direction as they made sense of adult life. And my two daughters were aged around 10 and 12. So I was really trying to see life through their eyes and thinking, I wouldn't want to be a kid at this time of the world. You know, it's so confusing. And, you know, this is quite a while ago, so it's even worse now. So that was the idea of an organic farm that wasn't just a good thing in its own right, but was really going to serve young people to find their roots. And I still think that the idea is brilliant. The thing that was unbelievable was me doing it, because at that point I was a very capable business manager, but I had absolutely no experience of farming or education or working with teenagers. But one of the good things and dangerous things about the Harvard MBA is it kind of teaches you how to parachute into an area where you have no experience and how to find experts quickly and use them and deploy them. So I was very blessed to find good people to work with me. And amazingly, after, you know, several years of turmoil, we got the farm and the education center up and running, and it's still running. You know, 25 years later, I go back occasionally, and it's really heartwarming. It's still doing the same work that I hoped it would with school children and teenagers, and it's a thriving organic farm. I think the joke in this, which took me a while to realize, was that although I was busy setting up this center to educate teenagers, actually I was in huge need of an education myself. And being involved in organic farming was a massive shock. You know, someone who's used to making things happen and kind of deciding where you were going and doing it, I suddenly realized you couldn't. I had a very articulate farm manager, Peter, who early on said to me, "Alan, you need to realize that on an organic farm, you can't make anything happen." He said, "It's like driving a tractor without a steering wheel." I thought, oh, you know, how am I going to cope with this? So what the book is offering is really what I learned the hard way, which is the art of organic farming or organic gardening is that you have to have a very close observation, understanding of the system you're working with, and you have to steer it towards the result that you want by natural means. And what I came to realize was that I think that that is much more what most human life is like. You're dealing with other people, dealing with the complexities of daily life. It's far more about steering an ecosystem in a direction than it is about some mechanical idea of imposing control.
Wow. Okay. I'm so interested in all of this. First of all, I love how you said that you were open to a new idea after your at your kind of the apex of your corporate career. Your career is kind of, I'm not nearly as highly decorated, I think, as you, but I had a similar path. I was in chemical engineering, and I worked in the energy business for like 20 years before I pursued my spiritual path. I find a lot of people who come on to this podcast, they leave their business world and they end up going and sitting at the feet of some guru in India or something like that, which I did not ever do. I think one of the things that really intrigues me is going from being this making something happen person that you chose organic farming rather than, you know, Procter & Gamble, they've got a lot of chemical processes. I worked with chemical processes. What made you decide to abandon that and go organic?
Well, the part of my education was really kind of seeing the natural world as a set of living organisms that needed to be respected and cared for. By this point, the whole idea of sustainability, silent spring, all this was kind of already out there. Mm-hmm. And I was becoming really uncomfortably aware of the environmental impact of mainstream business. And one of the things I learned and was really quite shocking was how severe the environmental impact is of regular mainstream farming. Mm-hmm. You know, I think most of us who are not involved with it don't know the amount of chemicals that are involved, what that does to the soil and the water systems. It's gotten so bad that we're beginning to hear it in the headlines now. But, you know, back then, 20 years ago, people didn't know this and I didn't know this.
Right. I remember too. I've talked to people before that do organic farming, and I learned from them that if you have the soil conditions right, then all the chemicals that we think we have to put on, like pesticides and things like that, you don't have to put on because the soil conditions are right. But the way we farm now is we completely rape the soil of its natural nutrients, and then we have to put fertilizer on, and then we have to put bug spray on. So the whole thing is just a chemical soup.
It really is. And I think there's a really good analogy between, you know, healthy soil and a sort of healthy human metabolism. One of the things I loved in organic farming as I started to meet organic farmers was for them, their main measure of success was not the output. It wasn't what they produced. It was the quality of their soil. They said, you know, if the soil is strong and healthy, then I know that I can get through whatever problems, you know, the weather throws at me or the pests, and I can produce what I want. So, you know, to me, that's very parallel for people. If we really look after our own well-being and resilience, then we can cope with what life throws at us without having to kind of depend on a chemical soup ourselves.
Right. The whole pharmaceutical, pop a pill. I don't feel good, pop a pill. Yeah. It's the same thing. Why don't we move into some of these metaphors that you share in your book that's really about how the well-being of the farm and these organic methods help us cultivate our own human nature. Let's go into some of that because I just found that fascinating. I love the analogies.
Well, I still feel amazed that, you know, this came through me because it seems to be unique and you don't often get a kind of unique insight, but I don't know anyone else who's using this parallel. So I think my favorite one, and when I'm reading a workshop, this is the one where people get excited, is composting. So when I explain to them that on organic cultivation systems, instead of using all these chemicals to force the growth, you're basically composting your waste and the people can do the same. They start to sort of light up and say, wow, that's an amazing idea. So to me, the basic principle is the same that, you know, I think most people spend a lot of energy pushing away or suppressing negative feelings and anxious thoughts and stress. And I said, well, just turn that around and imagine that there are ways in which you could actually, in effect, kind of refine your waste energy into something positive. Now, I also say to them, look, if you're dealing with a major issue, I realize that you're not just going to do that in a few minutes with an exercise that I'm leading. You'll need professional help, time, etc. But for kind of everyday irritations, you can actually do this for yourself. And on my workshops, I give people a couple of ways of doing that. One is sort of circular breathing method. So I invite people to imagine they're breathing up the spine to the head, down the front of the body to the base of the spine. And they keep doing that with long, slow, deep breaths. And as they do that, they imagine that they're identifying where in their body the negative feelings or thoughts are. And they kind of hook them on as if they're going round and round on a conveyor belt. And as they do that, I invite them to say, now imagine that as this negative energy moves around you, you're extracting the positive energy and you're discarding the negatives. You know, you're actually letting them drop down through your feet into the earth. The other method I use is what I call stomping. So there's quite a lot of research that says that, you know, if your body system is distressed by too much adrenaline, too much cortisol or whatever, movement actually helps. So I say, look, if someone's upset you, just ham it up. Start waving your arms and ranting a bit and stomping around. Go for a brisk walk or just stomp around in the room. Say, this is outrageous. I won't have it. It's not right. It's disgraceful. And that sense of getting the energy moving, yeah, this is another way of doing it. I think the other thing I say about composting for people is that if you, with time, what I find is not only do I get positive energy out of this process, but I get insights. So, you know, if I'm pushing something once, I'm not even going to think about the way that person distressed me. I don't learn anything. But if I kind of use this kind of composting method, I start to get insights and wisdom from the situation as well as energy.
I love that. So like composting is taking your waste, and I'm thinking about the actual process. You turn it and you allow it to kind of do its organic breakdown. So I can see the analogy of how we can do this with our thoughts and the things that we want to. It's a transformation process. I'm just thinking about composting. It's taking the waste and it's turning it, and through this process of turning, that it becomes something that's useful. And I completely get that what we do with negative thoughts or irritations, that we have all these fight, flight, avoid, you know, kind of responses. We pretend that we get over them or we fight back or something. But this turning it around and actually transforming that thought is what you're asking people to do. And then ultimately that creates new soil.
Yeah. And I mean, I started this, I suppose I'd say relatively simplistically. You know, I kept looking at these smelly piles of manure on the farm and think, this is incredible. You know, over time, used the right way, this is the source of growth. And then when I was writing the book, I actually went into this more thoroughly. And I looked at the stages of composting, like anaerobic composting. And it's a bit like you say, in the book, I actually go through a short process of just a breathing exercise, but then I go through the seven stages. And you know, for a start, with compost in the garden or the farm, you have to heap it up. You have to kind of get a kind of critical mass in order to start the process working. So I think that is also a useful kind of parallel for people. And that needs a bit of courage. So saying, instead of kind of, you know, dispersing your worries and emotions, actually be brave and pile them up, get them brewing, and then, you know, you want to raise some heat in the situation as you're doing a compost heap. And the turning, all this applies, you know, it's like, let this process work in your subconscious, but every so often dive into it and look at it. And to me, that's like turning the compost.
Yeah. So you do this at workshops at your organic farm, this kind of work with people?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are some others?
Well, so one of the other ones I really like that I use literally every day is crop rotation. So in an organic farm or a garden, you typically have a system where you rotate your crops around different beds or fields. And in particular, that if you've been growing a very demanding crop, so for example, on the farm I set up, we had a couple of fields where we'd be growing wheat. And wheat takes a lot of energy out of the ground because it's a very sort of high quality crop. So after you've been growing wheat on a field for 2 or 3 years, you either have to leave it to rest, like what we call lying fallow, or else you plant what's called a renewal crop like clover, which actually puts nitrogen back into the soil. And when I started to think about this and the way I'd been working in my business career, where I was just constantly pushing myself, I thought, this is brilliant. So these days, what I do, you know, some of my work is quite demanding or difficult. I've got to have a difficult conversation, or I've got to file a tax return or something like that. I have a really deep kind of instinct of self-care, which says if I've been doing something that's demanding and depleting, I don't keep pushing myself out of that. I give myself a treat. I call up a friend, or I go for a walk, or I stop and have a cup of tea or something. And that basic idea of rotating between the kind of demanding outputs and the renewal time, I think it's a really lovely part of sort of taking care of our human nature.
And having been in the corporate world and being a successful corporate business guy, you came out of the world making everything happen. And probably, I remember that there wasn't a lot of Sabbath time, downtime in the whole corporate rat race. You just keep going. And there's no surprise that there's so much burnout and that you just get so frustrated and so exhausted. And maybe we take a week-long vacation or two-week vacation, whatever. But that certainly isn't even close to what crop rotation would be.
It's not. I mean, probably the most challenging group I've done group workshops with is hospital doctors. I mean, certainly in the UK, these people would arrive literally physically rigid with stress. It's like you knew that they, and I was doing this with a doctor, you know, a trained medical doctor who had specialized in what he called the neurophysiology of stress for doctors. So he would explain to them the physiology of what was happening to them. He said, look, if you don't take breaks after, you know, a couple of hours, what happens? You start to lose your empathy with your patient. Mm. You start to lose the quality of your judgment. And we knew that they're under incredible time pressure. But what we also were able to demonstrate to them was that even if they took like a 5-minute break after 2 hours of intense work, just, you know, switching off their attention, we said, look, in an ideal world, just take 5 minutes, step outside, look at a tree, look at the sky, just do something to change your attention mode. And even 5 minutes of that would really kind of restore them. So it can be done even in very high pressure work. And similarly, I've done training with the management coaches who are working with very stressed business managers. And the same thing, you have to be realistic about the context they're in. But even in that context, you can actually sneak some of these organic approaches in.
Very interesting. I think the idea of even in 5 minutes reconnecting with the natural world, you're sitting in a hospital, or I remember I worked in a 10-story office building and there was an oil refinery across the street. I worked in an oil refinery. And there were times that I would just have to go out and take a walk just to get outside, get away from the fluorescent lights, get away from the building and breathe fresh air and just take a walk. And that would kind of rejuvenate my day. But I would think that being able to walk into the woods or the forest or a park or something like that would be even more soothing and more renewing. Do you want to talk a little bit about reestablishing our connection with the natural world?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the results of COVID, certainly in the UK, was that a lot of people were kind of reminded that just getting outdoors is good for your well-being. And, you know, that's kind of common sense. I think what my book, Natural Happiness Offers, is a way of of actually getting a lot deeper well-being benefit from being in the outdoors. Because, you know, it's not just about going out and kind of saying, yeah, it's nice and green out here. It's about really engaging with nature, recognizing what I would call the spiritual wisdom of nature, and learning how to connect with that. I suppose one of the big things that I learned was about the different speed in kind of the human sort of metabolism. I think is very speedy, especially these days where it's like, you know, attention span, we're jumping from one thing to another. Whereas I think that what you might call the speed of nature is much slower. So after the organic farm, I went on to set up a woodland retreat center. So it was a 70-acre woodland with beautiful old beech trees and oak trees. And that's really where I started to learn how to meditate with trees. And I can remember in the early days, you know, I thought this would be a good thing, but I'm embarrassed to say that I would arrive with a clipboard and a series of questions, like I was going to interview the tree. And I soon found out that you know, trees just don't work like that. I don't know if you remember Treebeard, the tree in Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
the
hobbits
meet.
Yeah.
Not so hasty, hobbits. And I mean, that's really the essence of it. It's like, you know, what I learned and what I do in my workshops, if I'm working out of doors with trees, then I say to people, look, you just have to slow down. And actually, that's one of the benefits. It's like most of us humans really urgently need to slow down every day, actually, because we're just going too fast. We're thinking too fast. And being with a tree, I think, actually really helps us to do that. There's something about the atmosphere and the presence of trees that is calming. And being physically with a tree is even better. You know, you can actually do this by imagining a tree, but if you can sit with a tree, I think it does slow you down. So in the workshops I do, usually I do something called the tree talk, where I actually invite people to try this. And, you know, if you want us to give that a go during this, then maybe we could try it.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. But first, I just want to highlight this statement you made, the speed of nature. I like that term, the speed of nature, and that it is so much slower than us. And I think that our disconnection from that speed of nature, and I'm certainly presuming that there was a time in human history where we were moving with the speed of nature, and now we're moving at this other accelerated speed, which really disconnects us, not just physically, but also in time. It's really kind of wreaking havoc on our own lives and on nature. And so to be able to restore ourselves to the ability to communicate or connect with a tree, I would think would really be just a really great thing. So yeah, why don't you lead us in this, and then we'll talk about it. Yeah.
Great. So this is you could call this a guided visualization. It's going to take about 5 minutes. So I invite your listeners just to get themselves comfortable. And if you feel happy closing your eyes, it may help you to visualize what I'm going to invite you to do. So take a couple of long, deep, relaxing breaths. Just let any tensions go from your body and your thoughts. I invite you to imagine you're outside on a lovely, sunny spring day with a tree. This might be a real tree that you know and like, or you could imagine a tree. Just picture yourself out of doors in the spring sunshine with a tree. Just let yourself look up at this tree and enjoy it. Probably it's got its young, bright green spring leaves are coming out. And then imagine that you're making some physical contact with this tree. You might like to lean against it with your back against the trunk of the tree. You could hug it. You can imagine sitting with it. Just enjoy the physical presence of the tree and see how that helps you to just relax and slow down. Now I'm going to ask you to imagine that you are a kind of tree yourself, just like the tree that you're in contact with. So start by imagining that you have roots in the earth, just like this tree that you're with. So imagine that under your feet, down into the earth, you have a network of roots spreading out into the earth. And the roots of a tree have two main functions. First, they're drawing up nourishment and resources from the earth. And secondly, they're giving the tree stability. So they anchor the tree into the earth, they spread out and give the tree a kind of grip in the earth so that it's stable. So I invite you to imagine how your root network is functioning for you. Is it big enough to give you all the nutrition and all the stability that you need in your life? Now bring your attention up to the trunk. So feel the trunk of the tree you're with and imagine that you have a trunk as well. And imagining yourself as a tree, your trunk needs to be strong and flexible so it can bend with the wind, but it doesn't blow right over. And your trunk is also where you process your resources, where you process inputs to create your outputs. So I'll invite you to check in about how your trunk is doing. Does your trunk feel it's got the right balance of being strong and flexible? And do you feel like you're processing resources effectively to get all the resources you need for your outputs? Now I invite you to check out your branch network. So imagine that just like the tree you're with, you have a branch network high above you, spreading out, and these branches are where you produce your outputs, your berries, your nuts, your fruits, whatever it might be. And just get a picture of how big your branch network is, and whether it feels it's the right size, or maybe it feels it's a little bit too big, or it could be expanded. So just check out your branch network and how that feels to you. Now, finally, just look at the balance between your roots and your trunk and your branches. And in particular, check out whether you feel like your roots and your inputs are enough to support all of your outputs. And if you're feeling a little bit overstretched or depleted, then there are two main ways you can restore some balance. One is to give your roots more nourishment, and the other one is to prune back some of your branches, or maybe a little bit of each. So just see if you need a bit more balance, how you would achieve that with your roots and your trunk and your fruits. So let's draw this to a close. Say thank you to the tree you've been with. Invite you very gently to let your eyes open and just digest the experience.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So let's digest some of this a little bit, because let's just say, like, for example, myself, I felt good with my strength and resilience, the flexibility. I felt a little top heavy. So feeling a little top heavy means either I need to deepen, broaden my roots or trim my branches. So what is the mechanism for the roots?
Well, for the roots, this is where we get back to composting. So in essence, what I would suggest for your roots would be that you look at where you've got negative emotions or thoughts that you could compost into a source of energy. So the second chapter of the book is called Natural Energy Sources. And there are two key clean energy sources for people that I think we don't use enough. One is appreciation and the other is inspiration. And in my experience, if I feel like I'm not getting enough appreciation, the answer is start giving it out. Because it's like if you give out appreciation the people you're working with or your friends and family, you start getting more of it back in. And I think most of us can remember that really warm glow when someone said, "Hey, that was terrific. You're doing so well. That was brilliant." You know, so appreciation to me is like solar energy. You know, it's there all the time, but you have to harness it. And in the same way, I think inspiration, you know, all of us have probably had experiences where we felt really inspired. We had a vision of what we were doing, a sense of bigger purpose. And that is a huge source of energy as well. So though composting, appreciation, inspiration are the three things that I would suggest, which would nourish your roots some more.
Interesting. Interesting. From a spiritual perspective, I would have guessed that the roots had more to do with like being grounded in faith and being grounded in understanding and just feeling that you are secure. That's what I would have guessed it was. But I do like your analogy a lot.
Well, I guess I see all of that as part of inspiration, really.
Okay.
You know, I think inspiration needs grounding. So you could say the inspiration itself needs roots in the earth, the way you described.
Yeah. Very interesting. I think it's so interesting that nature is, well, first of all, we call it nature as if it's something that's outside of ourselves, which is kind of amusing, but that it's reflecting back to us all the time. Who we are, what we can be, what's going on with us. And like on my property, we have geese and they come back every spring around this time. And a bunch of couples come back and they have babies. And just watching their parenting skills, it's just as like such an example of how to be a good parent or how to be family.
Yeah.
And everything in the natural world is speaking to us all the time about reminding us who we can restore ourselves back to. And it's just fascinating that it's right there all the time.
Absolutely. I think there's a huge amount of wisdom and intelligence and nourishment in nature. But as I said, I think the big thing I've learned is that you have to slow down and kind of reorient yourself in order to connect with it.
Yeah, because I think what we do is we watch it on TV. We watch nature on TV. Or we sit in our living rooms and watch it in our backyard, but to really go fully immerse ourselves like in the soil, like you're doing, do you kind of recommend that we should all perhaps start a garden and that there's something good for us in that?
I think there's something enormously good about that. Yeah, I think the physical feel of the earth is very grounding and calming. And, you know, even people in cities, you could grow things in pots, you can even grow a few, you know, herbs, at least, you know, on your windowsills and so on. But I think that process of being in touch with the soil and just seeing the process of growth, of caring for plants by watering them, weeding them, I think there's something very, very steadying about that.
Can we talk about weeds a little bit? I'm a strange person that I have problems pulling weeds. I'll do it, but I'm thinking, well, they have as much right to live as everybody else. And so,
well, yes. What do we say about weeds? Well, one of the things I remember my farm manager saying to me, he said, "Alan, don't just think of weeds as a pest." He said, "Every weed has a message for you." He said, "You know, what weed you get where is telling you something about the soil. It's telling you it's too wet or it's got, you know, it's too acidic or something." So the first thing I think is to say, yeah, respect the weeds. They're not just a random problem. They're actually doing something. And secondly, my wife, who's a keen gardener, occasionally says to me, "Well, you think of a weed as just a plant that's not where you want it to be."
Right.
I do think there is a role for weeding. So certainly, you know, we're involved in a community market garden where we live, and quite a lot of my work there is weeding. And I suppose what I would say is that I'm doing it with respect. So to me, that means recognizing that, you know, there is life in a plant or an animal or a tree. So I'm saying, look, I'm really sorry about this, but for me, you're in the wrong place. I'm going to have to pull you out. But I kind of try and do it with respect and regret. But I do think there's a role for weeds, and sometimes you just have to kind of pull them out, and sometimes you have to live with them.
Yeah, I suppose if they're messengers, I think that's an interesting way of looking at them, that if they're messengers, they've conveyed their message, that their role is to show us what their message is. But I do think it's kind of interesting that we humans have created what we think a garden looks like. And like, I remember going to, oh gosh, what's the name of the big place in France, Paris, outside Paris?
Not Versailles.
Versailles. Okay.
Personally.
Yeah. I remember going to Versailles and seeing those gardens and how they're so manicured and shaped and that's kind of like the human will making something happen. Like you were talking about in organic farming, you're not making something happen, but we're making something happen by making it be pear-shaped or square-shaped or whatever. And that's how humanity has done a lot of its, quote, gardening in history. And that's like a willful thing. And it sounds like the organic gardening is more of a willingness of a working with the land and with the plants and with the weeds and listening to what they're all wanting and saying.
Very much so. I'm trying to give everything space. So one of my favorite parts of the certification system for organic farm is what they call wild margins. What that means is that you have to leave some of the edge of your fields as wild. So you allow the weeds to grow, and that's where, you know, butterflies and insects can be as well. And one of the benefits of that for us as humans is that when you do get, you know, a new pest or disease in the crop you're growing, you hope that the antidote comes from wild margins. And in the book, I think community is becoming very, very important for humans. And I've got a whole chapter about what we can learn from ecosystems about community. And one of the things is, I think this idea of wild margins is really important for human communities. What I notice is that most of human communities tend to sort of become a bit homogeneous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult to tolerate too much difference and diversity. So what I'm saying in the book is really try and tolerate the wild margins in your communities, which means the people who are cranky or mavericks who have a different view or disagree with you. Because, you know, when you hit a new problem and you don't know what the answer is, it's very likely that it's the cranky maverick people who will come out with a different perspective and help you.
Oh, that is, I love that, especially in today's world where we're beginning more and more, we're getting into these little groups that reflect the exact same opinion or view or political stance or whatever that we have. And it's these little silos are everywhere. Look out in the wild and there's this amazing biodiversity and all of these different species growing and tolerating each other and benefiting each other. And it's almost like is it like monocropping? Only hanging out with one crop.
Yep.
And then planting them to the edge so there's no wild margin.
Exactly. So in some ways you could say that the weeds are like the mavericks in human society that you think they don't fit, but they have a role as well. And certainly in our organic garden, we do leave wild margins in the garden so that you don't eliminate the weeds. You just kind of ask them to sort of, you know, take their own space and leave you to get on with growing your crops.
Ah, I love that. There is a space for all of us. And it's really important that we can each express who we are. The weeds need to express who they are. And they attract their own kinds of insects and wildlife. And we cut them out. And then we're really, really affecting the biodiversity. And I love that analogy to human community. I think it's so important that we just figure out a way for us all to be in the same general space together and recognize that at the right time and the right place, everyone's going to be able to share their gifts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. What else? I love this. Are there any other metaphors that we've missed that are pretty important?
Well, I think one of the other ones that I wanted to talk about was quite specific dialogue with what you could call nature spirits. So one of the ingredients in inspiring me to go ahead and do this organic farm was a wonderful spiritual community in Scotland called the Fintorn Foundation. And I went up there with this vague, crazy idea about starting the farm. And it was the first example I'd seen of a functioning spiritual community that really worked with the land as well. And the way they work with the land is something that I then took forward into the farm and into the gardens. And I think, you know, this is an important part of the book as well. So they talk about what they call devas. So devas, they believe that, you know, there are spirits in all forms of nature. And that if you're a gardener, you really need to try and open up a dialogue with the devas of the plants that you're cultivating. So, you know, they would say that each plant species has a deva. So, you know, carrots would have a deva and tomatoes would have a deva. And then they'd also think that each location, each garden has a kind of overlighting angel or spirit. And, you know, my wife and I have been using that approach in our garden for several years and finding that it really helps. So, for example, you know, parsnips, which we're very fond of and are notoriously difficult to germinate, and we were struggling. So I said, all right, let's actually, you know, sit down here and do what Pinthorn would call an attunement. So an attunement is where you really put yourself in a receptive space. You say, okay, I don't know how to do this. I'm really opening up to listen to the guidance of the devas, like, you know, the parsnip deva and the angel of the garden say, what do you do? So, you know, it gave us a completely different way of getting these parsnips started, which succeeded. And also, I think attunement is very helpful with problems. So a classic problem over here is slugs, you know, slugs that kind of eat your prop. And the Findhorn approach is say, look, you know, talk to the slugs, you know, try and talk to them and say, okay, folks, you know, we need to grow these crops here. Please leave them alone. But, you know, over there is a crop that you can eat. So it's like, you don't just ask them to go away. You offer them something, you respect them, but you also say, I'm drawing a line here. You know, if you can't, you know, fit in with these requests, then tell me what works or else, you know, we have to take action. But I think that general principle of really respecting nature as having its own intelligence and its own kind of spiritual presence and trying to dialogue with it is very powerful. And, you know, Findhorn have been doing this for many years. And there's a wonderful garden in Virginia called the Perelandra Garden, which was started by a woman, Michael Small Wright, who was inspired by Findhorn and went on to took this even further. So she's written some wonderful books about how to work with the devas in a lot of detail, you know, how to actually set your planting plan using them.
Wow. This is like home ministry. I think this is so interesting. And we're so blind to this. There, you know, where we are in our evolution, we think that this is all ancient stuff or that, you know, those silly people back then who thought about fairies or whatever it is, that's nothing that we do today. But to engage the spirits, it certainly is a far cry from what we're doing with industrial farming, with these big, huge machines and the chemicals and everything. And it's so disconnected from the spirit of the land. So you're really talking about restoring the connection with the spirit of the land.
Very much so. And I mean, yeah, in the book, I don't have space to go into all of this in detail, but what I do is give you websites and books so that anything like that that you want to go into further, like, well, what is this Perelandra workbook and where's Michael Small Wright's website? All that's in the book. So I agree. I think it's quite exciting. And certainly, you know, there are people in the farming world who are working with spirits as well, particularly in the biodynamic sector, if you know that.
I do not. So share more about that.
Well, so When I was involved in setting up the organic farm, I looked at three kind of philosophies of cultivation. One was organic, one was permaculture, and the other was something called biodynamic. And biodynamic is the nearest I know to a kind of spiritual approach to cultivation. So biodynamic farming, the principles were evolved by a teacher called Rudolf Steiner.
Oh, I know
him.
He's
also known for the Steiner schools.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, his books are extremely hard to read, but I think he really was a genius. And what he did in the farming side was he articulated a method which drew on a lot of old traditions, like almost medieval traditions of how you work with the spirits of the land. He was using kind of like a form of homeopathy. So he would make preparations that you would actually stir in a particular way and you'd put small concentrations on the land like homeopathy. And you would really be trying to work with the spirits of the land, but also with the spirits of the animals that you had. And so the first farmer that we had on our organic farm was a biodynamic farmer. And I think, you know, this is a long subject, but all I would say is that I think that trying to farm spiritually is kind of the ideal thing. It's even more difficult than organic, but, you know, I know people who are doing it and I really respect the kind of atmosphere they create on the farm, and also how the food feels, you know, not just taste, but like biodynamic food, if you ever get a chance to try it, is really worth trying.
Wow. I see this. I feel like we're on the cusp of some major tectonic shift in humanity's evolution. And what we're doing isn't ultimately going to work long term. our complete disconnection with nature, complete disconnection with our spiritual selves. And this really brings us back. I know a lot of people are starting their own gardens, starting their own little farms. I've not heard this bio. I knew about Rudolf Steiner, but I didn't know about this biodynamic farming. This sounds like an entirely new, it sounds like a new career. It also sounds like a new thing that people could be moving into as we move away from this world that's just very, very material and destructive. Very exciting.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think at the moment we have a chance to kind of lay the roots for something that is going to have to recover, because the current mainstream system clearly is literally unsustainable.
Yes, it is. And so I think as people feel this call back to the earth, or call to go outside, or call to start their little garden, not ignoring the spiritual would be a good idea. The idea that there are guides here to help us with our cultivation. Really, really cool.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to make sure we're about 50 minutes now. So we've got another 5 or 10 minutes, but I want to make sure that you've been able to speak about all that you're interested in speaking about. I think that, well, actually, let me just ask you a quick question before I pass it over to you. Your book is called Natural Happiness. It's not called organic gardening. And so I'd love to know how you came to that name, because I know that that name has a message.
Well, I think in some ways I feel slightly embarrassed that I started my working career marketing with Procter & Gamble, but I do feel like I've kind of used my marketing training to good effect. So, yeah, partly what I was trained to do was to look for the benefit. And hence, you know, to me, natural happiness is expressing a benefit, whereas organic gardening is a kind of a methodology. And I was also looking for something that was catchy. So I thought, two words people can just hang on to. And similarly, the website is naturalhappiness.net. It's about as simple as you can get. But I mean, you know, in the same way, I mean, I wrote most of this book out of doors. So I wrote this book like sitting with trees, listening to kind of, in a way, what you call the nature spirits. So I feel like I'm very blessed to have something that really can help people, that's come through me. And I do see it like that. I feel like I've been a vehicle for it. And you know, to me, there was a kind of sense of guidance coming through what I've written in the book.
Yeah, I think it's a really great name, because we attribute happiness to a lot of things like material success or material possessions, but you're kind of turning that 90 degrees or on its side and saying, but this is like the real happiness, the natural happiness, the happiness that comes from nature and from our connection to ourselves. So I think it's a really, really great title. Okay, so now I'll turn it over to you to share whatever your final message might be.
Well, we've covered a lot of what's in the book. I think a couple of things I'd add. One is, one of my visions of this book is that it's a self-help book for people who don't like self-help books. Meaning, you know, there are a lot of people who I think are struggling in life, but, you know, don't think that self-help books are a bit airy-fairy or a bit new age or a bit esoteric. So using these analogies with organic gardening and farming, I think is about as down-to-earth and tangible as you can get. And I've also been careful to try and put everything in very simple language that isn't esoteric. And even where I'm talking about something a little bit unusual like the devas, I've explained exactly what I mean by it, and, you know, here's how you can find out more. So I think that's one message I'd like to leave with your listeners, is if they're finding life a bit overwhelming but they don't really like self-help books, then I think this is worth a try, because then it's very approachable. One of my other hopes for this book is, quite a lot of my work at the moment is really trying to figure out how we can all face into the climate crisis. And the research suggests that, yeah, most people know there is a climate crisis, but most people are finding it really overwhelming. It's very difficult to kind of figure out how to make sense of it and how to kind of respond to it. So that's one of the other things that I hope the book will help people with. And the way I've structured the book is that the first few chapters are really about how you look after your own well-being. And that's where things like, you know, natural energy sources and composting come in. And I'm hoping that gives people a sort of foundation of enough resilience that they can then start to look around them at the wider world and say, okay, now I'm feeling a bit more resilient. I can see that there are some pretty difficult issues out there that I need to kind of engage with. So there's a whole chapter later in the book called Growing Through Climate Change. And one of the other parallels that I think is very useful between farming and human nature is about the whole idea of regenerative agriculture. So this is a kind of fairly new trend in farming. And it's like going beyond organic agriculture to say, it's not just about kind of being sustainable, it's actually about regenerating depleted resources. And my feeling is that an awful lot of people are quite depleted and burned out and stressed up at the moment. So the idea of regeneration for human nature, I think, is very, very timely. And again, there are some really useful metaphors in the book about how we can learn from regenerative agriculture, both to sort of regenerate our own well-being, but to regenerate the way we live, reduce our impact, and start to actually regenerate the ecosystems that we depend on. Because it's like, you know, those two really go together. It's like we have to kind of regenerate ourselves in order to be able to kind of reach out and regenerate the ecosystems as well.
Wonderful. I love that. So let me ask you a really quick question before we close, because I think there's also a threat of food sources that ultimately, you know, we keep relying on going to the grocery store and that food's going to be there. But if we keep depleting our soils and keep adding all the chemicals and everything, we may have a food supply issue. And I think that's another thing that calls people to maybe start doing their own gardening. And you're providing a roadmap for how to go about that if people become moved to be their own supplier of food.
I agree with you. I think that there's a serious risk of food shortages and, you know, mega price inflation in food prices within the next few years. So I think it's really important that people try to grow more of their own food, you know, that they try and set up community market garden systems and support local growers. You know, there's a lot of evidence that even in cities and towns, you can grow more food. There's a lot of, you know, land that's not used, and there's quite a lot of evidence. You know, I can remember a lovely project in the Bronx in New York, for example, which is quite a depressed area, where a community market garden really regenerated the social fabric of the community, as well as providing local food. So it's a real win-win.
Yes.
And I agree. I think it would be great to see more of that.
Yeah, everybody comes to the garden as opposed to sitting in their own houses and just pulling TV dinners out of the refrigerator. Yeah, we've got a whole, wow. I think it's exciting. I think we've got a whole new world ahead of us. And I think that you're steering us in the right direction to maybe take on this organic gardening and create, you know, reconnect with nature, reconnect with trees and the plants and all the spirits and see what we can create from here. I think it's very hopeful and exciting.
Well, thank you. I agree. And it's been lovely exploring it with you. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you. And I really appreciate all the listeners. I will have Alan's links in the show notes. And I hope you check it out and start your own natural happiness going on. I now close the Spiritual Forum.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, you can let me know by leaving a positive rating and review on your favorite podcast app, or make a tax-deductible donation at thespiritualforum.org. The Spiritual Forum is a podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry affiliated with Unity Worldwide Ministries. Thank you again for being a part of the Spiritual Forum community. And remember, you are an amazing, divine, and powerful being.